this political coliseum, we slay the rising beast with the fateful sword of truth that transcends hypocrisy and censorship. It's time to unleash yourself from the tyrants of media propaganda on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. This is Unleashed, the Political News Hour.
This is Bruce Robertson for Unleashed, the Political News Hour on America Out Loud News Network, where we bring you the latest news stories and analysis every single day of the week. So get comfortable and get ready and buckle up as we cover the stories that the lamestream media refuses to report, and we unleash the truth that you so desperately need to hear. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest with us with some very important information that you really should hear. I promise you, you're not going to want to miss this. But first, in the news in this past week, we have several items that we should call your attention to. On an ongoing basis, we have a government that has failed to execute the laws of the nation. We have a government that wants to take taxpayer money to cancel loans that the taxpayer didn't borrow. We have open borders where people are streaming in and infiltrating our country with no control and no vetting and no process under the rule of law. We have a nation, a government, an administration that has an attitude toward our allies that is highly questionable. And first, before we get to our special guests, let's cover a couple other headline news items that have popped up and come across my desk in the last week. First of all, we have P. Diddy, Sean Combs. His producer recently said this P. Diddy scandal could be worse than Jeffrey Epstein. Jesse Waters has said that every room in Diddy's mansions were wired with cameras, and this was used to create blackmail material for the people he had invited over as guests. And he's citing the lawsuit that was filed by Rodney Little Rod Jones, another rapper who's filing a lawsuit against P. Diddy. Now, they'd bring in these people. A lot of these people were also aspiring young artists in the music industry. And then these parties were sponsored by Motown Records CEO, Universal Records CEO. This goes all the way to the top. And so you get these people in compromising situations. They were lacing people's drinks. Their videotapes were perverse. They were hot. And then at the end of the day, you wake up the next morning and say, what did I do? And then they have compromising material on you, and then they can guide your career, or they could kill your career. But they've definitely got you. And it wasn't just people in the music business. There were athletes. There were celebrities. There were politicians. There were people from the royal family. Very similar to the Jeffrey Epstein situation. And we were also told by the former bodyguard Sean Combs, P. Diddy, that Diddy was an informant, an FBI informant. So he was a snitch. And he was feeding information to the feds. And we don't exactly know what that means. We haven't been able to confirm it, but even the rapper Little Rod said it's not just like Epstein. It could be worse than Jeffrey Epstein. That story continues to develop. Then we have the FBI this last week that quietly released during the solar eclipse. When everybody was distracted by this big hype of the eclipse, the FBI quietly released the unclassified file on Ashley Babbitt. Do you think that was a coincidence, that timing? While most Americans were dialed in on the solar eclipse, the FBI quietly released unclassified documents on Ashley Babbitt. And again, that's developing, and we should dig that out. Then we have a CIA officer who was caught bragging about imprisoning Americans. Gavin O'Blenis, a contracting officer of the CIA, told an undercover journalist with Sound Investigations that the FBI can put anybody in jail and set them up. O'Blenis said of InfoWars founder Alex Jones, the FBI took his money away and chopped his legs off. So this was a hit job on Alex Jones. Regardless of what you think of Alex Jones, nobody should be treated like that in our society by our government or law enforcement agencies. So he admitted at least 20 undercover FBI agents were at the US Capitol on January 6, 2021. At least 20? I heard that there were over 200. So O'Blenis also said the FBI uses embellished news and fake social media accounts to really get people worked up and angry. What do you think about that, folks? And Dr. Phil is back in the news. Dr. Phil has really been dropping some red pills to our general public lately. He just destroyed a DEI advocate in just under 40 seconds. He said to this person who was promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion programs on his show, he said, "What gives a DEI program the right to come in and try and alter the nature of things to create equality of outcome? You know, America is all about equal opportunity, not equal outcome, right?" So the human resources head that he had on the show said, "How do we help level the playing field for everyone?" And Dr. Phil says, "Okay, so that means you're trying to create equality of outcome." And the person said, And Dr. Phil said, "That's what I hear you saying about playing God." That's Pastor James Ward Jr. He said, "That's what I hear you saying about playing God. How do you create equality of outcome when people aren't the same? You're right. Some people are shorter, some people are taller, looking over that fence. They can't both play in the NBA. You can't create equality of outcome. So what gives a DEI program the right to come in and try and alter the nature of things to create equality of outcome? That's been tried. That didn't work. That was called Marxism." Dr. Phil just shut them down. And mentioning Alex, speaking of Alex Jones, speaking of that wild man, Alex Jones is suing the FBI and CIA after undercover video reveals that the feds targeted him directly. Now, we heard that testimony that said that they targeted him directly, and now he's suing the FBI and CIA. This is really happening, folks. And a video reveals that feds covered the camera before the deadly raid of the Bill and Hillary Clinton Airport executive's home. So you know that there was an airport named after Bill and Hillary Clinton. Maybe you don't know that, but there was. It's an international airport, and the so the exec one executive the one of the key executives of the Bill and Hillary Clinton Airport had a raid on his home, and the executive was shot in the head last month by federal agents. That story is still developing, but it's very suspicious. So we should let's keep posts on that, and we'll try and follow up on that story later and let you know what happened. And in Georgia, Fannie Willis is again in the news. Georgia defendant catches Fannie Willis in a new crime. Fannie Willis has been thrown into the spotlight yet again. It's already known that Fannie Willis committed perjury while lying in court about the length of her affair and when it started with her lead prosecutor, Nathan Wade. Well, now Fannie Willis is accused of illegally recording a telephone call during an unrelated criminal case in Maryland. Now, is a prosecutor supposed to get away with illegally recording a telephone call? The accusation comes from Harrison Floyd. Not Harrison Ford, Harrison Floyd. He's a former leader of Black Voices for Trump, and he's a defendant in Fannie Willis's lawfare suit against President Trump and his associates. So she's not just prosecuting President Trump. She's prosecuting the head of Black Voices for Trump. And I think there's some 20 some odd other defendants in the case. Floyd said in a video recording, he said, "My attorney and I made it public that District Attorney Fannie Willis very likely violated the Maryland Wiretapping Act, which is a felony in Maryland. As far as we are aware, District Attorney Willis did not have a warrant, and the call was not made in furtherance of law enforcement because I was already in custody," he said. "She simply broke the law." Well, well, well. And we have a UK watchdog now that has fined Pfizer for misleading the public on the COVID vaccines. Pfizer has come under scrutiny by the UK's pharmaceutical watchdog, the Prescription Medicines Code of Practice Authority, PMCPA. You know, they love these acronyms. And they have come under scrutiny for breaching the regulatory code five times. The accusations stem from senior executives' use of social media to promote an unlicensed COVID vaccine, alongside making misleading claims such as the phrase 95% effective and the declaration that children aged 5 to 11 would benefit from these shots. Naomi Wolf reports that this is a slap on the wrist, but it's a serious one. It affects public opinion, certainly in Britain, and this kind of ruling will certainly make it easier for people in the UK to say, "I was injured. Look, I was lied to." It's a lie to say that it was safe and effective regarding the COVID vaccines. RFK Jr. also is in the news. He left Chris Cuomo speechless for 2 minutes straight. He said, "The whole country has just had a big medical experiment for the last 3 years performed on them." So, you know, he reveals he's going to perform a massive experiment himself, and that experiment is telling the truth to people. You know, whether you support Kennedy or not, he's making some excellent points. And now we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, we're going to come back with our very special guest, Dr. Nicholas Papanikolaou.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced Nutrition Company, HealthyCell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And HealthyCell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Welcome back to Unleashed, the Political News Hour with Bruce Robertson. Today, we have a special guest with us, and I'm delighted to introduce him. Dr. Nicholas Papanikolaou has an undergraduate degree in economics from Harvard. He graduated in 3 years instead of four, by the way, so he's a really smart guy. And he has an MBA from Columbia. He has two doctorates, one in theology and one in Christian ministry. And he has extensive experience in a number of different industries. He's a maritime expert who was vice president of the Onassis organization under the famous Aristotle Onassis. And subsequently, Dr. Papanikolaou became a ship owner of large ocean-going ships himself. He also invested and presided over a number of other industries. In the early 1980s, he was the majority shareholder and chairman of the board of the esteemed Aston Martin British Automobile Company. He successfully turned the company around and assured its return to success. And it's safe to say that we would probably not be seeing Aston Martins on the road today if not for Dr. Papanikolaou and his team, his management team. He's the author of four books, all available on Amazon, one of which, entitled Bring Down That Wall, was awarded Best Books of the Year category by Amazon's editorial board. He's also one of the three founders of the World Public Forum, Dialogue of Civilization, which for 18 consecutive years brought 600 VIPs together from more than 60 countries, including prime ministers and presidents and dignitaries of countries around the world. And he brought them together in a forum on the island of Rhodes in Greece to openly discuss interreligious and intercultural issues. I'm sure there was some geopolitic discussion going on there as well. He speaks four languages fluently. So you can see he's an underachiever. And he was an international polo player as well, whose team won several championships around the world. Dr. Papanikolaou, welcome to Unleashed with Bruce Robertson on the America Out Loud News Network.
Well, thank you, Bruce. Thank you for having me.
I'd like to kick this off by discussing some things with you. You know, we have some issues that we wanted, the topics that we wanted to discuss here, and one of them is the border situation going on right now. One of them is the student loan situation that Biden is touching on. You know, another one is who's really the biggest threat to our republic, Trump or Biden? And we also wanted to talk about, you know, republic versus democracy and some other things. But, you know, Nick, what's your view of what's going on right now in our world and in our country?
Well, we live in very interesting but dangerous times. One impression that I definitely have is that, you know, when you read back the history of the founders and how the Constitution was arrived at and how they elaborated every word of it, those founders were all gentlemen and they were patriots. And the one thing they never contemplated was that public officials would not do their duty.
Yeah.
There was only a very narrow provision in the Constitution with regard to impeachment of federal officials. But, you know, being gentlemen, they never contemplated that, for example, that there would be a president of the United States who would refuse to faithfully observe the laws of the nation with regard to, for example, immigration, or with regard to forgiving the debts of one segment of society and making the other segments, in plural, of society pay for that. They never contemplated that. So we live in a very peculiar time when, you know, liberties are taken regarding the constitutional rights and prerogatives that a president has, and are just flaunted.
Right.
I've never seen this before. I do love studying history, and especially how the United States Constitution was arrived at, because it really was an extraordinary document, and it is an extraordinary document, and it founded an extraordinary, exceptional republic. But what I see today is that it is being trampled on.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So let's dig into a couple of the topics that are on our that we think are important. I think one of the topics that I'd like to raise is the border situation. What do you think about the border situation and what's going on now?
Well, basically, I think it's a very cynical move by those who are responsible for conceiving it and implementing it. I think it's quite intentional that these people are admitted against all the laws of the republic, are admitted into the country. And I think what lies behind it is, of course, the thinking that surely the DNC and the Democrat Party have that they are importing and creating new voters for them that will stick with them for the next, who knows, 25 or 30 years. I actually happen to think that they're mistaken in that evaluation, because the vast majority of these people that are coming in are leaving backgrounds in their own nations that they're basically escaping from, and they don't want to see to come to the United States to find another failed state. So their set of values, I think that the Democrat Party will find out sooner or later, are different from what the Democrat Party thinks it will get out of these people. But first things first, this is a very cynical move. And when you have, you know, people like the Secretary of Homeland Security, and of course, on top of him, because he's not an independent actor in this, he's following directions from above, openly flaunting the laws of the republic, I don't think that, you know, I cannot think of a situation before in American history where there was such flaunting, cynical flaunting of the laws of the nation by government officials.
Yeah, it's almost subversive, isn't it?
Yes.
So with this open border situation, it seems to me, now I'd like to know your views on this, but it seems to me that there is there's a dependency agenda afoot that may go back to the very comments of our founding fathers. And one of their concerns was that I think that politicians could create this situation where they could create dependency on themselves. Is that not right?
Yes. I mean, you know, this reminds me of when there was an active dialogue, you know, correspondence between the founders, and in particular, John Adams, who was also subsequently the third president, or was he the second? I forget now. Where the debate between the founders was, do we want a democracy or do we want a republic? And I'm quoting John Adams responding to the rest of his correspondence, saying, and I quote, "There has never been a democracy which did not eventually commit suicide." And when he is challenged on that, well, why do you say that? What he says is that because democracies commit suicide when the government officials discover that they can put their hands into the public treasury with impunity to support their own causes. And so that very much reminds me of where we are today. We see this administration insisting and, in fact, resisting and flaunting the decision of the United States Supreme Court forbidding the forgiveness of student loans. And yet what we see them trying to do again and again, they're coming back at it, is to use public money to essentially buy off a certain segment of the electorate, which are people that have college loans, making the rest of society pay for it so that they can have the benefit of those votes. And so it's a very cynical move.
Yeah, it's very cynical. And I again, subversive is the word that comes to mind to me. I mean, I'm an American citizen. I'm a natural born American citizen. I took student loans out to go to college. I came from a middle class family. And of course, I borrowed money to go to college. And I paid back my student loans. And now they're asking me to use my tax money to pay off people's student loans who didn't pay back their student loans. I mean, it's farcical almost. It's theft, really, I think. What do you think?
Well, yes, I agree. And it's eminently unfair to people who paid their loans, like you, repaid their loans. And it's also eminently unfair to the rest of society who are not college graduates and who did not, get student loans.
Very good point.
So they're stealing from one party to give to the other. And when you ask yourself, well, why would they do that? The answer is because they expect to get to reap a harvest of those votes. So they're using the public treasury essentially to buy votes.
Yeah,
and making the rest of society pay for it. And it's very unfair and it's unconstitutional. I'm clear about that, though I'm not a lawyer. But, you know, none of us, by the way, and this is for the benefit of all our listeners, need to be lawyers to read our Constitution. It's in plain English.
Words have meaning, don't they?
Exactly.
And, I think that our founding fathers, although they were very well-educated men, tried to put it in as plain terms as possible so that each person could read it just like every person could read the Bible.
Exactly.
And it calls to attention to me a comment by a quote by Benjamin Franklin, another one of our founding fathers, when he said, "Democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting for what to have for lunch." And liberty. And I would add to that.
I've never heard that.
I would add to that, liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This is something that is really alarming. And I think the heartland of America, the majority of citizens must be pulling their hair out over this, right?
Well, it's not only the eminent unfairness of it to, in fact, the vast majority of society, because, you know, college grads that have outstanding student loans are but a small percentage of the total population. It's not only that, but it's actually also the open flaunting by this administration of res judicata, of a decision that came down from the United States Supreme Court that said that you cannot do this. It's not constitutional. And yet they keep coming back. When was it, yesterday or the day before, that the Biden administration announced that they're taking another crack at it, but this time they're calling it by a different name and saying that this is really to help economic development. So it's like trying to put lipstick on a pig, but it's still the same pig.
Yeah. I mean, you know, student loans and government forgiveness has been a very hot topic among progressives, even back since the Occupy Wall Street movement began. And,
right.
You know, the movement consisted of educated but underemployed urban progressives who were upset with the obvious corporate corruption that ensued after the Great Recession, as they saw it. The central theme there was that Wall Street operated a series of blatantly corrupt and risky financial schemes that tanked the economy, you know, but the instrumental, right. The instrumental and systemically important Wall Street players were bailed out all at taxpayer expense. I mean, it was basically corporate welfare, wasn't it?
Yes. But, you know, you can make an argument that, for example, if you help prop up a major bank which has depositors, which has real significance for the continued survival and success of our economy, you have a more powerful case to make than to say, well, I'm going to forgive, you know, $1.5 trillion worth of college debt from that minority who are college grads, and within that minority, a further minority who are those college grads who have not actually repaid their loans. So what I'm trying to say is that if you're facing the prospect of, Wells Fargo or JP Morgan Chase going bankrupt, you've got a much stronger case to say, I'm going to prop them up because it benefits the whole economy, than you do by saying, I'm going to support a tiny minority of our population and make the rest of them pay for it.
Well, and there was an insidious little switch that they did too, because they took the loan responsibility away from the banks and put it on the federal government. So the banks are not in the student loan game anymore, right? Now, when you had a student loan, you had an obligation to a bank, and it would affect your credit record. Now you have an obligation to who? To the big, huge Leviathan government in Washington, D.C.? Who is your lender? You know?
Yeah.
So that was a little switch that they did. It was like a shell game that they played with the American public. And, you know,
right.
in my opinion, the concept of student loan forgiveness kind of touches on the basic principle of fundamental fairness. Graduating high schoolers and professionals seeking associate, bachelor, graduate, or doctoral degrees are often sold degrees on the basis that the degree would provide them with an abundance of opportunity. But unfortunately, as we have seen, these opportunities are often exaggerated. And, according to recent reports, more than half of recent four-year college graduates are underemployed. And worse than that, after a decade, nearly half of them still don't hold a job in their field of choice. So, over 54% of independent undergraduate students accepted federal loans. So when looking at these large discrepancies, one would expect the solution to be an evaluation around whether a degree is required to perform certain jobs. But nobody's doing that, connecting those dotted lines, right?
No, and you've got a further dimension to this, Bruce, which is that, as we all know, college costs have exploded.
Yeah.
And so here you have an industry, if you want to call it such, where they didn't do the proper management that they should have to control their expenses. They just let them, gloriously explode up, always with the thinking, well, the federal government is there. It's going to extend student loans to the students, so we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
And so it's like rewarding inefficiency.
And writing off student loan debt at the taxpayer's expense allows these universities to keep inflating costs without any accountability.
What you have is every, aspiring would-be, associate professor that has some pet project or experiment that he wants to conduct, which is of dubious value, gets to have his own lab, and, the expenses keep exploding, and there's nobody exercising proper management. That's certainly the picture that's emerging, exercising proper management to say, this is not necessary.
Yeah.
What's the cost-benefit analysis here?
And of course, despite the shamelessness of these actions, Biden is marching around promoting himself as a champion of student loan forgiveness to the voters.
Let me give you an example of what we've seen recently. You remember the whole case with Dr. Gay, the president of Harvard, who, when she appeared before Congress, was refusing to say that anti-Semitism is a condemnable act and that it violates the code of conduct, et cetera, of Harvard. Well, eventually, the Harvard Corporation, as it is called, which is the equivalent of the trustees, had to dismiss her as president of Harvard.
Now,
so she was dismissed.
Nick, can I have you hold that thought for a second? Because we've got to go to a break right now, and I want to pick up on this. But I have 15 seconds left, so let's go to a break, and I'll pick up on that subject when we come back. Is that okay with you?
Okay.
All right.
Of course.
All right. Thanks. This is Unleashed on America Out Loud. And we're going to go to a break and come right back with Dr. Nicholas Papanicolaou.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutloud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Spike proteins help viruses enter into your cells, disrupting your health and your well-being. Global Healing's Foreign Protein Cleanse detoxes your body of spike proteins, which allows your body to repair from within, supporting your immune and respiratory systems and regulating your inflammatory response. Formulated by Dr. Edward Group and by Dr. Brian Artis, Foreign Protein Cleanse targets and detoxes spike proteins in the body. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop. That's AmericaOutloud.shop. And use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Welcome back to Unleashed. I'm your host, Bruce Robertson. And before we left for the break, we were having a conversation with the esteemed Dr. Nicholas Papanicolaou. Before we left, Dr. Papanicolaou was talking about something he knows something pretty well about because he's a Harvard alumnus. And I'll just toss it back to Nick. And, you know, he was talking about the Harvard president.
Yeah, so to pick up where we left off, Bruce, when the Harvard Corporation, which, as I was saying, is the equivalent of a board of trustees, they just call it the Harvard Corporation, finally decided to dismiss Dr. Claudine Gay as president because of all the, you know, confusion and controversy surrounding her testimony before Congress about anti-Semitism. So when they dismissed her, the strong rumor among the Harvard community is that her compensation annually is now a mere $800,000 a year. She reverted to being a full-time professor, a tenured professor, and I believe a dean. And the word around is that her salary now is $800,000 a year. Well, that is ridiculous. That is absolutely ridiculous. And it bears evidence to the fact that these private universities do not control their costs.
And why should they? If they can just keep inflating them and the government picks up the tab.
Right, through student loans. So it's a bad circle that needs to be stopped. As we all know, life in the end, you know, it was economics that brought down the Soviet Union. You know, they were great on their theory of Marxism, Leninism, and so forth, but it came to a point where the bucks, the money, couldn't match the ideology. And I think that, you know, universities in America are sort of approaching that point, because you cannot be Alice in Wonderland, not control your costs, and expect to be able constantly to offload your inefficiencies on the state, the federal government, and on the students.
Well, and how can you actually, you know, I think the real problem is that they got the whole thing backwards. They're trying to create, in a system of equal opportunity, they're trying to create equal outcome.
Yes, well, that's, of course, a favorite item on the agenda of the left in our country. It's not that they don't want equality of opportunity, they want equality of outcomes, right, which is exactly what Soviet Russia was all about, and we all saw how that system collapsed.
Sure. You can't make people equal. You know, people who are equal are not free, and people who are free are not equal.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting play on words.
So now we have this situation, and I think really, and I'd like to get your feedback on this, but, you know, I've studied our history and quite a bit, and, you know, I go back to the dependency agenda that was created by LBJ in, 1964, the War on Poverty and the Great Society, where he greatly expanded welfare. And I believe he did it for the same reason Biden's canceling student loans. He wanted to buy the vote of our inner city minorities. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm sure that there's an element of that to it, definitely. But I suppose that in his case, you could make a counter argument that this was really also a program intended to bring minorities into, you know, the American dream and so forth. But today, when we're talking about wholesale forgiveness of college loans for professionals who are, most of whom are making very big salaries every year, it is just downright scandalous.
Well, I don't know if you're aware of it, but LBJ was caught on tape saying, we'll have them, the blacks he meant, voting Democrat for the next 100 years.
Yeah, I'm sure he had that thought.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they definitely had an angle there, because he was the Senate Majority Leader. He was prominent in Democrat politics for many years before he became governor of Texas, and before he became vice president. And and he filibustered civil rights repeatedly over those years.
He was also famous for his very pointed index finger, which he would use as a stiletto on people that he was trying to, you know, coerce into voting for his bills. He would, you know, corner them in some recess of the corridors in the Senate and jab them with his finger. And he wasn't shy to do that.
I seem to remember a famous photograph of him doing just that with his finger in the chest of a congressman.
Right, right.
You know, and he also, because he was so prominent in Congress and in the Senate, he knew where all the bones were buried. He had all the dirt on everybody, right?
I guess.
And if he didn't have the dirt, he was certainly not beneath him to fabricate it. But anyway, it's an interesting study. There's a great book called The Dependency Agenda that I often mention when I'm in these kinds of discussions, and it talks all about that stuff. So let's move to let's broaden the topic a little bit to internationally, because you have some great, well, first of all, I'd really like you to comment on the maritime situation that happened in Maryland, because, you know, you have a unique background in maritime commerce, and I'd like to hear your views on what happened at the bridge, the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Maryland.
Well, I think it is, the whole quote unquote accident is suspect, and I'm hoping that the authorities are really going to do a thorough job investigating it. Let me tell you a little bit about the technical characteristics of big ships like that, because obviously I have a lot of familiarity with them. This ship suffered a complete blackout some 13 minutes before collision. It was coming around the bend, just as, you know, you could calculate at the rate at which it was turning, and they had now straightened out their rudder, and the bow was kind of lined up with one of the four pylons. And that's a very narrow objective, if you like, you know, to get one of the four pylons. It blacks out. Now, then Eyewitnesses from the shore have said that some 3 minutes before the collision, the lights on the ship flickered on again, and then they flickered off again.
Yes.
Now, when you look at the technical characteristics, these ships have an engine room which is located down, you know, deep in the ship, and at the level above the bottom of the engine room, you have three large generators, electricity generators. The reason they're located one deck above is that if the bottom of the engine room starts to flood for whatever reason, the generators are located a bit higher and they can still be operative. Also, in accordance with the SOLAS convention, SOLAS is the Safety of Life at Sea convention.
Okay.
Big ships like this, in fact, any ship that is over about 200 feet in length overall, and this ship was close to 1,000 feet, has to have an emergency generator located on the uppermost deck of the ship. And the rationale for the SOLAS convention for this regulation is the same, that if you have an accident and the engine room floods, you should still have an emergency generator located at the highest point of the ship, which can still turn the lights on so people can see what is happening and maybe operate winches for lifeboats, even though, you know, now the newest design for a lifeboat is it just drops vertically. But the idea is that you would have some fundamental electricity to save the crew.
So let me see if I understand this correctly. In addition to the power source of the engine, there are two basically redundant power sources in addition. Is that correct?
Well, there are three main generators in the engine room.
Oh, got it.
Plus an emergency generator located not in the engine room, but on the uppermost deck of the ship.
Okay.
And that emergency generator is independent of the others. It is supposed to be able to kick in and provide fundamental, you know, basic electricity, lighting, so people are not completely lost in the darkness of the bowels of the ship.
Right.
So that emergency generator clearly failed here. First of all, it should have kicked in the minute that there was a blackout on the ship. In other words, 13 minutes before the collision, the emergency generator should have kicked in. It did not. It kicked in some 3 minutes before the collision. And as I say, the lights, according to eyewitnesses, flickered on briefly, and then they flickered off. So what we have here is a massive electrical failure. I know that there were some theorists, that came out and they said, well, this happened because the fuel was contaminated. But that theory does not hold water, in my opinion, because first of all, you have two different kinds of fuel on a ship like this. One is called MDO, which is marine diesel oil, and that is the fuel that the generators use. It's a lighter, more refined product. And then you have HVF, heavy fuel oil, which powers the main engine plant. So the theory that, you know, the fuel was somehow contaminated would have had to affect both fuel systems. And in any event, I'm sure that the authorities now, you know, 2 weeks or more after the accident, they thoroughly tested the tanks, and I'm sure they know that the fuel was not contaminated.
Right.
But even if the fuel was contaminated, the point is that the emergency generator did kick in belatedly, and then it flickered off. That,
wow,
to me, is evidence of a massive electrical failure on the ship. So now you have to ask yourself, well, what caused that? Was it internal sabotage by a member of the crew? Was it possibly a fire in the electrical system? And if it was, what caused it? And how catastrophic was it? Or was it perhaps a bombardment of the ship's electrical system from somebody on shore that was hitting it with microwave or some other kind of high-tech wave attack that incapacitated the electrical system? But
so it could be electromagnetic pulse.
All the hallmarks here, uh-huh, of a massive electrical failure.
So it could have been electromagnetic pulse. It could have ostensibly even been from not on shore, but up in the sky someplace.
Well, who knows? Or it could have been internal. I'm sure that by now, of course, the authorities have also interviewed every member of the crew to determine if there was any possibility of internal sabotage on the ship.
Right.
So certainly the authorities right now, even as you and I speak, know a lot more than you and I know. But some theories, you know, you could discard immediately. And as I say, this has all the hallmarks of a massive electrical failure. And that is not common on ships.
Right, right. Okay, well, your insight on this is invaluable to getting to the bottom of it, but I don't know. It'd be interesting if we ever get to the bottom of it, based on the type of shifting around of evidence and information that we've seen with our justice system and our investigative forces and so forth. But, your experience is really valuable in helping us understand what happened there. Now I'd like to pivot. You know, you've got such a vast field of knowledge and some great input on a wide variety of topics. I'd like to discuss with you a little bit the situation in the Middle East. I know you have opinions on this, and I'd really like to hear them. What's going on with our attitude toward Israel, one of our greatest allies in the Middle East, our only great ally in the Middle East, I might add?
Well, I think that, you know, what is happening now with the pivot that the Biden administration is making, publicly condemning Israel and so forth, is really regrettable. It's a stab in the back. People seem to be forgetting, and the administration certainly doesn't make any effort to remind the American public, that all of this started due to the really barbarous pre-medieval attack of Hamas against Israel on October 7th. They started this, and yet we see that the administration is all too ready to criticize Israel about trying to root out Hamas out of Gaza so that they don't have this barbarous threat right on their border. Incidental of that pivot that we're seeing now take place by the Biden administration is the resolution that came out of the UN Security Council on March 25th, right, where the UN Security Council basically adopted a resolution that calls on Israel to immediately go to a ceasefire. So that means that they are to interrupt the hunting down of these barbarous terrorists from Hamas. And then this resolution makes no mention of the continuing hostage situation, where you have both American citizens and Israelis still being held hostage, which is a violation of, you know, the Geneva Convention, et cetera, et cetera. Nor is there any mention or condemnation of Hamas for what they did. So this UN resolution, which came out, I repeat, on March 25th, could have been vetoed by any one member of the UN Security Council. And usually it is the United States that vetoed it. But this time, the Biden administration evidently gave instructions to our UN ambassador to abstain, which means that the resolution would go through. This raises two questions in my mind. One is, why did the administration not veto it? If they had vetoed it, it would not have passed. And the attendant question is also, why didn't some of the other members of the Security Council, which are Western powers, for example, the United Kingdom and France, why didn't they veto it? Because, you know, we tend to think of these UN resolutions from the Security Council as always, you know, sitting squarely on the shoulders of the United States of America. But I'd like our listeners to think about one extra dimension here. Why doesn't Great Britain and why doesn't France ever veto? They have the right also. Or Russia,
sure,
or China. They're members of the UN Security Council too. So they take a free pass. We give them a free pass, which is not right. And this time, as I say, the Biden administration evidently ordered our UN ambassador to abstain, which allowed the UN resolution to go through. So what we have is the UN resolution basically trying to tie the hands of Israel in hunting down these terrorists, right? And,
yeah,
and at the same time, it makes no mention of Israeli hostages, of American hostages, of the barbarities that were visited upon the Israelis by Hamas. No word on that. It's mum. And that is just not fair.
That's not even consistent with our past policy, even with the Iran hostages.
Right.
And, you know, then we have Nancy Pelosi coming out recently and saying we should stop arming Israel. And then we have Chuck Schumer coming out and verbally recommending a change in government in Israel. He wants to, it's almost like he's trying to verbally depose Netanyahu. What do you think about that?
Well, that is gross interference in the internal affairs of another nation. And we're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
So we're living in a time where the historic traditional rules of behavior are completely being flaunted. And it really rhymes me when I hear some of these same politicians say that we are in our international relations, there have to be rules-based behavior, when they are the first to flaunt that rules-based behavior.
So it's rules for thee and not for me.
It's really a free-for-all.
Yeah. Now, we have about 1 minute left in this great broadcast, and I really thank you for joining us. Is there anything else you'd like my listeners to know in terms of what's going on internationally and what might be done about it?
Well, there are a number of things, and, you know, my goodness, that's a large topic. But one thing that we haven't really touched on is the border. And here, once again, as with the case with the student loans, we see a situation that the founders never contemplated, which was that our high government officials would refuse to obey the oaths of office that they took, which were that they would observe and abide by the laws of the land. And so that is being cynically flaunted also, because the Democrat Party evidently believes that it is creating a new electorate by admitting these people illegally into the country. And, you know, you have to ask yourself at some point, with all the human trafficking taking place, the sex trafficking, the crime that has been unleashed, the new crime wave on America, do these people have blood on their hands?
Yes. So
vulnerable victims.
Well, we're out of time. I bet we could do a whole other show on all of this stuff because there's so much to cover here. Dr. Papanikolaou, I really appreciate you joining us. And I hope our listeners enjoyed your presentation as much as I did. And this is Bruce Robertson for Unleashed, the Political News Hour.